Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 793. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, we just left some good wrestling talk on the floor before the show here, but we will try to continue that vibe as we talk about, well, a decent chunk of wrestling between Friday, Saturday, and Monday here. No real, I don't feel like news, but definitely a lot of wrestling news, wrestling arrival yeah. news for sure. And definitely some interesting results for many of the competitors here on Extreme Rules. It was Sunday in Philadelphia, or Saturday in Philadelphia, I should say. Nice little, I've got to admit, as an overall whole, enjoyed the pay-per-view. What is your wider impression of the show itself?
No, the show itself, I liked the show a lot. I thought it was a really, really good, fun show to, easy to watch, entertaining show. And there was some pretty big news at the end, and we probably should just might as well just start there. After weeks of speculation, and just out prediction, guarantee, Bray Wyatt has returned.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been really bizarre for him to show up anywhere but the WWE at this point.
Yeah, no, he's had a year and a half to sign with AEW. And I don't know which one was less bullish on the idea, but, you know, nothing ever really came of it there. Talk that old Freddie Prinze Jr. was eyeing Bray Wyatt for his new promotion, but, you know, at the end of the day, Bray Wyatt was just going to leverage whatever he had, offer he had to give from anybody else to get back into WWE, because not only is he back in WWE with a mega push, he has apparently also gotten his brother his job back, and an announcement earlier in the week that a comic book writer friend of his was joining the WWE creative team as well, so apparently, Bray Wyatt had quite a bit of leverage in these negotiations.
Yeah, that sounds like some Cody Rhodes level stuff right there. Making sure that your character does not bomb, and you get a real active voice in what goes on with it. Because. Yeah, that Bray Wyatt character did definitely run afoul of a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, there was a somewhat recent quote attributed to him. I don't know really where it came from. Supposedly some Comic-Con over in Europe, where he mentioned that he is completely self-aware that with the whole Firefly Funhouse persona, that he was just doing the same thing over and over again in a circle, and when the bell rang, the matches sucked. Good to know that he's had self-awareness about that. Now, what he's done in the last year and a half to make his matches more exciting, we shall see. There is some confusion on my part as to what exactly was all the symbolism from Saturday about, because at the time, I'm seeing it as he's putting the Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse characters to rest. But other people see it as these costume characters are going to become his new cult, and they will be unmasked to reveal people we know. So there's two schools of thought here. Where do you land?
It's a good question, because I know that the only thing that I at least saw, even though I don't really keep up with the Twitter, they send me enough highlights that Supposedly there was the Bray Wyatt 6 or something like that.
That has been a thing that he has had in his Twitter bio, I think, for maybe 6 months to a year now.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of an interesting note here. How far back has he been thinking about something along these lines? At first I was thinking he was just going to be Swamp Bray again, just be Bayou Bray Wyatt again, and was putting all that Firefly Funhouse stuff to rest. But it would appear to me that while he is going to be, certainly he's brought back the Lantern, he is dressing like the original Bray Wyatt, that there's enough evidence that these characters are going to be here to stay. Now, whoever was under the costumes on Saturday don't necessarily have to be the people who are eventually revealed. It's just, whatever bodies were available at the time. So you don't have to tell. These people were spent all day Sunday.
My God.
Trying to look at the physiques and figure out who was who. It's like...
Yeah, that's a fool's errand. Like, come on, have you watched wrestling for more than 5 years?
Yeah, no. It does not matter. Now more leaning towards that this is going to be Bray Wyatt's new cult, and they're going to bring up, they're going to turn some people, they're going to bring some people up from NXT to play, to be these roles. So, now obviously they're also not going to wrestle in these costumes.
Oh.
We have seen the attempt at a Man in a Buddy costume or wrestling a match during the Adam Rose run, but I hope we're not going to try that again.
Well, we did recently kind of try that out. Poor Wendy Chu had to wrestle in a onesie, which is not quite a bunny costume, but you're getting goddamn close. So, and it doesn't work out well, because even Wendy finally is just like, nah, that's for the birds. Like, I need to wear some type of wrestling onesie type of situation going on here so that I can actually wrestle. So, yeah, wrestling in those costumes, I think is nonsense. It was nonsense those couple of weeks that, who was that, down there with Joe Gacy now, what their name is escaping me.
Oh, God, we're going to do this again?
Well, no. I don't mean the characters' names. What's the group? The group name?
Oh, crap, I can't even remember that either.
Okay. Well, anywho, but...
They wrestled
with the hoods on. That's what I wanted to get to the hood part, like. Fuck yes. The names, I guess. But they read, and it was really awkward with them doing that. Like, and I don't, for whoever is involved in this whole new Bray Wyatt setup, I just don't want them to be awkward. Like, just kind of introduce them and have them, be at least some level of normal. Like, I know that we're not going to be getting, G.I. Joe in this group or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it wouldn't surprise me if Gacy ends up in this group. I don't know about the other two, but Gacy would certainly not surprise me at all. Although, of course, his character has been a leader, but I don't think he's ready to be a leader in any kind of a faction on the main roster, so...
Yeah, let him be an underling for a while. Yeah, I mean, that could work. He definitely fits the cult look. So why not go for it?
If you're going to bring him up to the main roster, this is definitely a way to do it. So yeah, no, this is... Again, I'm going to be very open-minded about whatever this is. However this turns out, hopefully some mistakes from the past have been learned from, and we realize that either A, Bray Wyatt himself needs to stay away from the title picture, or he just simply needs to be a better wrestler and pull his weight in big matches without all the gimmicks.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that it's, in some ways, it's almost anecdotal evidence. I feel like, it was one of those things that I never thought when he was way back, when he was Husky Harris and actually kind of had to participate in matches as not a character. It seemed like he was a good wrestler to me. I know that's a long time ago. I guess I always pinned the bad wrestling on the fact that he was invincible, and it's just like, yeah, there's only so many places you can go when you're invincible.
I think The Undertaker went pretty far.
If they had started his character around the time that Bray Wyatt's character got started, that it would have lasted as long as it did. But, I mean, you also need to, as you already noted, you need to book it right. Like, if that's the way you're going to go, you need to do the right things. And, I mean, it kind of got pretty crazy talk. Because just right off the bat, it's one thing to kind of run through someone. Didn't he take a sledgehammer shot to the head or something in his first match? It's just like, where do you go after this? Like, yeah, it's one thing with, Undertaker just dismantling Jimmy Snuka. It's another when you take a sledgehammer shot and get up from it, and you're just like, huh?
He shook off the sledgehammer, but he got put down by the old jackhammer. They pushed that thing to the main events way too quickly. There wasn't a lot, much in the way of editing done here. They just kind of let him do whatever. Between Bray himself, Bruce Pritchard has always been a big supporter of doing occult type gimmicks, and without any tether to it, to reality, or thinking about whether is the end product of this when the bell rings going to actually succeed. They got pretty wild with some things. I mean, that the Randy Orton feud that ended up killing off the Fiend. That thing jumped the shark about multiple times, and yet they still let it last about over 6 months.
And I do hope that, I guess not just Bray Wyatt's friend, it does seem like there's definitely an overhaul in thinking in the WWE currently. Because this gimmick didn't really run on NXT, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Like, Triple H didn't really do this gimmick.
No.
So, it will be interesting. It's definitely a bit of a reboot. I do agree that, yeah, anecdotally, I might have thought that he was okay in the ring, but yeah, he needs the... They at least need to put the... together decent enough matches for him to be a better character. You know, without all... You can always have gimmicky spots, like... Obviously, I mean, even going back to hulking up, you know, like... There's always a way to have some level of immunity to pain seep into a match. Don't go overboard with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Bray Wyatt stuff is going to be interesting. Nothing came of it on Monday, which is something that can be said. They they showed the whole entrance again. They did not really give any hints about what may or may not be going on with him, and I'm trying to think, did they say that he was going to appear on SmackDown, or did they just leave things be? His entrance was cool.
There were commercials for SmackDown advertising Bray Wyatt and only Bray Wyatt. So it does appear that we will get a Bray Wyatt segment, and where he will most likely speak for the first time. Interesting that that puts him either solid at SmackDown or as a free agent.
Oh.
Because I was waiting for that moment where DX was out on Raw and the lights went out and, you know, the lights come back on and they're all just laying down because, you know, obviously they're not going to take a bump. And then Bray Wyatt and his Wyatt 6 are standing over them. But no, they didn't.
Sean Waltman might be willing to take a bump.
Yeah.
The other three, not so much. But it was kind of interesting. I was kind of waiting for them to pop up at some point, and they didn't. So we still got time to see how this thing plays out. Because there still hasn't been any true mention of the six on TV as of this current time of recording.
No.
So, we could end up with six, we could end up with less, we could end up with more, Lord only knows. But it's gonna be an interesting one to, see come together. I don't know if I necessarily want to see, the old gang back together. Per se, because is Rowan still out there as kind of a free agent?
He's kind of a free agent. He's pretty much worked everywhere, multiple times over, and then, obviously Braun Strowman is doing his own thing right now. I don't think you pull him back in.
Yeah. Oh.
So no. We're not doing that again. We'll be interested to see if Alexa Bliss joins this new faction. There are a lot of hints took place during her segments.
But there's also
possibly that Bray Wyatt would also be angry with her as well for stealing his gimmick. Although they wouldn't actually say that.
That would be hilarious. Gimmick infringement. Huh? What are you talking about?
It'll be interesting to watch unfold. I said, I'm giving it a chance. Let's see where they can go with this.
With that being the biggest of the news... Would the second biggest be the Bloodline storyline that is gone from Friday to Saturday to Monday?
Well, it didn't go to Saturday at all.
Weren't they involved somehow?
None of them. None of them were actually on Extreme Rules.
You know, somehow I thought that they still had some type of a segment on there. So, it's Roman Reigns. And as we pointed out earlier, last week, that he was going to be bracketing the pay-per-view, he did indeed do that. where he gets a big long segment on Friday Night SmackDown, and then also leads off Monday Night Raw this week.
Yes, he did, and there was a flowing storyline for the Bloodline, in that the allegiances of one Jey Uso were called into question, or his commitment to the Bloodline and his temperament were all questioned by Logan Paul, then by Roman Reigns himself. And then Roman Reigns put Sami Zayn in charge of Jey Uso. While Sami is just, God, oh, everything that man does is hilarious. Like, every movement of his head is hilarious. Every facial expression.
Yeah, he is really doing himself wrestling legend stuff, at this point.
He is. I mean, and Roman Reigns is just allowing himself to break. Just smiling and laughing through everything Sami says.
In some ways, I can understand why his character is so amused at this. Because
he's been torturing Jay from this whole Tribal Chief. Deep down, there's so many layers here, so many ways you can go. I mean, we've been talking all this time about, well, when they kick Sami Zayn out of the group and Sami Zayn becomes a babyface, there's a babyface redemption story for Jey Uso in all of this. Now, granted, we've always mentioned that, does anyone really want to watch the Usos fight, that the brothers fight each other if Jimmy was to stay with Roman Reigns, but, you know, this, as I said, this whole Tribal Chief storyline started with Jay refusing to kiss the ring and Roman beating him into submission. Roman Reigns has enjoyed torturing Jey Uso. He's, you know, used him as a human shield, essentially.
Yes.
His interference after Jay was forced to acknowledge his Tribal Chief and serve it his head as hand. People had mentioned that, you know, there's still a Jey Uso storyline here, and I put it in the back of my mind and really think of it, but no. It all makes sense from the beginning of the Tribal Chief run. Of how, you know, Jey Uso was forced into this subservience, and he's just, you know, he's been silent, he's trying to be supportive, but now this goofball is my big mockery of his family and his son and him. He's struggling to take it anymore. So once again, our attention has been on, you know, Sami Zayn getting kicked out of the group. Is he going to turn, you know, what kind of a babyface can Sami Zayn be? But there's now the Jey Uso element. Throw it in here.
Yeah, and I do think that this series, I guess. Two is good enough, I guess, for a series, huh? This series of segments is really, I tilted the view that way, to leave that as much more of an open option right now. But I think that's why it was a one-track thing. It was just like, Jay was kind of being goofy and mad about everything, but it's just like, oh, whatever, like you said, Sami Zayn's gonna end up doing something wrong, he's gonna cost them a match, something's gonna happen, and he's gonna be the one to get the boot. They have certainly opened a door here, and even if it does end up being Sami Zayn in the long run, it's just a better story to at least have a second tease, so that there's more interest going into this thing. You know, like, wouldn't you agree?
It's definitely this is the best stuff they've done. It's so long, it's so layered, and you know the directions they can go from it, and all the history they can call back on. It's fantastic. as I said, it's probably my favorite thing WWE has done in so long. And it's again, and it you know, if you don't have that itch of the entirety of the Tribal Chief run, you know, you don't have this. But this is, while you think about how, you know, Roman Reigns is running out of opponents and the Usos are running out of opponents, and for the rank and file pay-per-views or premium live events, that is true.
No.
But to have this brilliant storyline going on, you know, throughout, and you know it's gonna lead somewhere, and it's where it's gonna lead is gonna be really, really good. And so it makes it a lot easier to realize, yeah, okay, this is why we're keeping up. This is why the Bloodline hasn't lost a major match. Because there's a story to unfold.
Yeah, and it's been one of the few storylines that Vince did not fumble on the way in his last few years in charge here. And
it was Vince who put Sami Zayn with the Bloodline in the first place. Vince wasn't gone when this started.
Yeah, I guess I'm still not surprised by that. It seemed pretty obvious to me, because I'm trying to think if he re-signed around the same time that Kevin Owens did.
Yes, he did. Yes, he okay. did. Yes, he read supposedly a very nice contract. Yes, yes. Somewhere between, well, no, it was a little bit before the Knoxville match, but during the conspiracy theorist run, Vince fell in love with Sami Zayn.
Yes.
And it's impossible not to fall in love with Sami Zayn, so it's not like Triple H, it's one of those things like the Maximum Male Models or Ezekiel, where Triple H is like, I don't get it, I don't want this. Gone. And of course, Roman Reigns is involved, and you know, he's got his stroke in the company, and I'm sure Paul Heyman has a lot of say in the creative of all this as well. So, yeah, there's certainly some heavy hitters, you know, supporting all of this. But, I mean, you have to be deaf and blind not to get what's going on here. Not to see into your goal.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely been a lot to poke at Vince, and rightfully so, as we've done quite a bit. But this was definitely one that, yeah, he has obviously a lot of trust in Roman Reigns and really everyone in the Bloodline, and Sami Zayn graduated into that category roughly a year ago. Or is that conspiracy thing even longer ago, I think?
That's even longer ago than that, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, Vince has been in love with this man for quite some time. And, again, rightfully so. Like, I love Sammy, and he's he is delivered in every way possible. So, yeah, good for everyone involved. I am going to be more than happy to sit back and relax and see how this thing all unfolds. I guess going back to the pay-per-view, I suppose, Fight Pit was the main event. Might have been predicted here that we were talking about that simply from the mechanics of the match.
Yeah.
And it did come to fruition that they used the ring itself and did just lower the fight pit onto it. They did have to take down, it looked like, even all of the ring posts.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, no, they did a good job with the setup. It looked really good on TV. Yes, it was a strong main event. They utilized the cage. They utilized the rules of the match. To a degree, they utilized Cormier, but you know, he wasn't there to be be put over or to be put in the storylines. To get that physical. Didn't take away from the match. I don't know if he necessarily adds a lot either, though.
He had the early kind of moment with both wrestlers, and then that was kind of it. You know, he was just window dressing after that. Which is fine. I guess I'd rather have that than have him get knocked out and then have another referee come in and have to decide things after someone else either tapped or, you know, some other shenanigans happened. It would have been hilarious, though, to watch him take a ref bump. I'm trying to think of who that was that almost died leaving the ring when Big Show blew it up, but I can't remember. Anywho, it would have been weird seeing Cormier take a bump, honestly, in this situation.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't have needed that, or just he didn't knock anybody out or anything, or... I don't know, they had a strong match inside the fight pit within the rules. They made that work really well. I think it's going to utilize the top platform with Riddle's insane senton landing straight on his ass. Adds up to him for taking that landing just right so he didn't blow out his tailbone. And was able to wrestle on Monday.
That's gotta hurt. Even if he did wrestle on Monday, that's still got to be smarting. Because, yeah, Seth Rollins did not take much of that bump.
No, but you had to play off that Seth, injured his ribs.
Well, he did get enough body on there that it wasn't like one of those, oh man, he really missed. But you could clearly tell that his ass was hitting the canvas first.
Yeah, you're definitely good. If this is the end of the feud, good blow up, Obviously, Steph was hurt by the loss. We'll talk about that later. As good of a main event as you could have in this situation where there was no clear main event and Roman Reigns wasn't on the show.
And that's what, that might be the only thing bad to say about the pay-per-view is that, or the premium live event. How dare I? I'm trying to correct myself. Anywho, there wasn't any, it was a collection of good matches, but there wasn't anything that really jumped out at the page to you as a general whole. I know that it's definitely another topic that we had touched on last week. We talked about the ass kicking that Bianca Belair took on last week's Raw. And, it seemed destined for Bayley to go ahead and win the championship back. It seems like a logical place. Bianca's kind of cemented herself as one of the main event stars of your product. She can probably take an L at this point if you want to, especially to one of their other stars. But Bianca got her ass handed to her and then ended up victorious and really took out Damage Control 3-on-1.
Yeah, she really did. She was a house of fire. Alexa and Asuka nowhere to be seen throughout Extreme Rules or Raw on Monday. But also, really strong one-on-one ladder match, and a hell of a finish that I am still do not understand how Bayley didn't break her jaw taking that KOD with a ladder. I mean, she had to have gotten her hands up at the absolute last. No, beautifully done. I mean, that was one of the most well-executed moves I've seen in a long time. Because she looked like her chin hit full force, and she should have broken her jaw.
Yeah, that was a hell of a bump. Bailey is a pro. I love her as a wrestler. And Bianca Belair also, tip of the hat to her. She is quite a wrestler herself. So yeah, this, for the first, women's ladder match, it turned out, quite well, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, hey, it's the best women's ladder match ever. Ba-dum-tsh. That was one of those things that I was kind of shocked that there hadn't been a ladder match for the women's championship at this point.
Well, no, because it's always been a multiple person type of deal on the main roster. NXT has done women's ladder matches.
Uh-oh.
They did those weird, the kind of weird ones that would determine the who won the advantage at War Games. And you had some kind of weird pairs, like, really? These two in a ladder match? It's a little... Okay. Yeah, especially the 2021 one, I think, was, you know, two really... I don't totally remember it, but it was, like, two really green ladies were put in that situation. It's just like, eh, okay, if you want to do this...
Yeah, this is a choice. recalling what you're talking about, and I can't think of who was involved either. So yeah, I'm still a little bit surprised. I don't mind if they do it more often, but yeah, I mean, I guess it really was essentially the Money in the Bank match for the ladies was. Oh, and.
Couple of TLC matches, yeah.
Okay. They did have a couple of TLC matches. That was the other thing. I was just thinking, I'm like, hold on, did Sasha and Charlotte have a TLC match at some juncture?
They never did, but Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky had a triple threat one.
Okay.
It was probably the closest thing to a one-on-one, and then there was the one where Charlotte and Becky teamed up against the Kabuki Warriors. That was the night Kairi Sane got absolutely rocked with a concussion.
Oh yeah.
So that one—that's not a—that's not a pretty match to look back on either. the triple threat was very good. It gets forgotten about in the annals of the matches these ladies having against each other. But yeah, no, this was the first straight up one-on-one ladder match between two women in the main roster, and it was the right two women to put in there, and it ended up a very good match.
Not much to talk about with the other ladies match, as we didn't really talk about it that much prior to this, honestly. Liv Morgan, I actually think that they might have done more for her character in this match than they have anything prior to this match.
Yeah, it was, once again, they played up the gutsy performance part. There were definitely some sloppy moments in this match. There are things that went awry that weren't even necessarily either their faults, like with the chair falling down from the corner, and it's like, would never call this a great match, but I enjoyed it for what it was, and you know, once again, you get over Ronda's mean streak, and you get over Liv's toughness and never say die attitude, because once again, she was choked out, she did not tap out.
Yeah.
Continue with her as a valiant babyface, or you could have her snap and turn heel as well down the line. But we definitely need to get away from the underdog, who this is her dream, and she deserves this because she loves it so much. You need whatever direction you're going with her, heel or babyface, from here on in, we have to. She's tough. She can handle herself.
Yeah.
She belongs here. She has to believe it in herself, in her. And they like to do that sometimes with the whole overplaying the underdog hand, but you know, it's we're to the point now where she's got to be confident, and she's got to show confidence in herself that she belongs here. She's not an underdog. She's not a fan who got lucky. She deserves to be here. And it's taken us years to get to this spot with her, and it's like, it's time for that.
Yeah. You've got to transition out of that mode at some juncture, and just be good at what you're doing. Like it's fine to ride that for a couple of years or whatever. But yeah, you need to be assertive and not just happy to be there. And that'll be the next step for Liv Morgan. And I do think, again, like, I think that she's in a better position to do that. I don't know if Ronda will help sell her toughness in the, you know, in a promo after this.
Maybe you could do something, but I would separate these two from each other. Because they have great chemistry and they have great matches with each other. I do think that whatever they do with Liv Morgan, it does need to be separate from Ronda, the Women's Championship.
Yeah, I agree on that front. But if even if Ronda just in a passing way kind of says how, you know, I didn't think she'd be that tough or something like that.
Now who is even would be the next top babyface on SmackDown to face a heel Ronda? That I don't know. I mean, you got Raquel and Shotzi in a team with each other going after Dakota and Io, so that puts them out of the picture. Yeah, they're a little light, so maybe they do need to keep this Liv Ronda thing going another month.
Yeah, I guess I don't have that roster pulled up here. I didn't think about that.
I don't necessarily want to see Charlotte Flair come back as a babyface and fight Ronda again anytime soon.
I mean, I'm laughing only because I could definitely see that happening. Because, yeah, I do kind of feel like they're pretty light in the women's division there on SmackDown. Let's see what they have. Aaliyah's one of the first ones on the list. That's B-Fab. Charlotte. Who else do we got for the ladies here? Oh, Natalia. Raquel. Sonya, who, yeah, is not going to be in there. Shotzi. Xia Li, and we can talk about her another time. Zelina Vega. I don't think Zelina Vega is going to be challenging Ronda Rousey.
No, I mean, if you want to play up the history with Ronda and Shayna, you might be able to get something there. No, I don't. Shayna's never really been a face in her entire career, so maybe that would be interesting as something to try. I mean, I've seen it said, and it wouldn't surprise me if this all comes to pass, that the WrestleMania matches feel like they're going to be Becky versus Ronda, finally, and Charlotte versus Bianca.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it seems like, well, that is something news-wise that at least works for this segment here, in the fact that Andrade seems to love to flap his gums, and the man did mention that Charlotte is just kind of taking some personal time currently.
She's taken almost nothing but personal time in the last 2 years.
Yeah,
it's a battle between her and Alexa Bliss.
Alexa Bliss, I will always say it seemed like she seemed willing to wrestle or wanted to be on TV. Charlotte has actively not been on TV a lot in a 2-year time period.
I mean, yeah, oh yeah, in a 2-year time period, and you know, she left in May to get married. I mean, within 2 or 3 weeks of that, Andrade's back on AEW TV, and she's still gone. She's still gone through the summer. She's still gone through SummerSlam. She's gone through Clash at the Castle. She's missing, you know, major shows. And the only hint of her is that she is on the Royal Rumble poster.
Uh-oh.
So she'll be back by then, apparently. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
She's an interest. Yeah. You know, what exactly the story is with her and how it feels like there's an up and down relationship she has with WWE management. And, you know, when she's around, she's the center of everything. But when she's not around, she's a ghost.
Oh. Yeah, there isn't that looming specter of her coming back from injury or something. There isn't some countdown clock. Just always is a little bit of a surprise when she pops back in to dominate the division. And I guess maybe that's something that Triple H will find a better way to handle. And I guess that is always the other interesting part when someone like Charlotte stays away for this long. Like, I don't know if she felt like she had that good of a relationship with Vince that she doesn't want to deal with Triple H. I mean, it's entirely possible.
I mean, Andrade is literally trying to get fired so he can go work for Triple H. So, obviously Andrade has high... As high hopes for the Triple H regime in his career. If he's ever able to get out of his AEW contract.
It does not seem like that's going to happen.
No. Although they probably should. Why are you spending 6 figures a year to keep a guy on your roster who doesn't want to be there? And you haven't really even featured it to the best of his... You haven't featured him to the best of his potential either.
Yeah. No, that's just been a disaster. Another one of those ones that it's just like, oh yeah, just give him the platform, and he gets the platform, but then he is not put on the platform at all, really.
Someone mentioned he's been doing the same backstage segment with the members of the family office for like 6 months straight.
Good Lord. That's awful. And entirely accurate.
They're always in that stairwell. Making deals with people. I don't know what's going on. The whole thing with Matt Hardy and Andrade. And why Andrade even wanted... why he even wanted to buy a piece of Paul Jones' army, I have no idea. What's that reference?
Just brutal. Whole thing's been brutal. So it. I guess to get back to Charlotte there. With Andrade being that high on Triple H, you would think that, not that she needs to clear the path for Andrade or anything, you would think that she'd kind of want to be involved sooner than this.
Yeah, it's a confusing situation. I mean, never have any reason to believe that Charlotte and Triple H have a bad relationship. You know, Triple H just gave her first break and, you know, pushed her to move in at Moon and NXT. So I don't think there's any reason to have bad feelings there. So yeah, it's a conundrum. What's kept her out so long when there doesn't seem to be an injury? I mean, you know, over on Instagram, you know, she her and Andrade are living it up. Whenever they're both off their respective television programs at the same time, they're living a nice life out there. paid not to do anything. So checks are still rolling in. So they can take 9 vacations a year.
Yeah, hey, it would be nice, I guess.
I would do the same thing.
Oh man. I was gonna say speaking of vacations, but that transition does not work at all. I guess there were two other. I kind of scanned through Extreme Rules, and there were two other matches here. One did not span into to Monday, so I guess I'll hit on that one first, and then we can use the other to maybe move along to Raw too. The strap match: Karrion Kross and Drew McIntyre. Anything?
This was the worst match of the show, without a doubt. I mean, I don't think it wasn't that actively bad or anything. It just anything Kross is involved with, it may not be the worst thing you've ever seen, but it's not going to be anything particularly exciting. I know Jeremy loves the guy, but I've never seen it. I don't get it, and I'll never get it.
You know, I was kind of interested in and of the fact that I feel like this is the first time that he's taken off the coat and shirt and everything. At least I will give him some credit. It does look like he's bulked up to look a little bit more in the big boys' range.
He looks fine. There's just a major disconnect he's just not that interesting to watch. And poor Drew. If there's anyone who's gotten screwed over in this regime change, it's definitely him. Now I don't know what Vince was gonna do with the Clash of the Castle result.
Oh.
But the way they did it, and then transitioning him even before the casual match is over into a feud with Kross, and now he's losing to Kross. If there's one person in the WWE who has a right to be disgruntled right now, it's Drew McIntyre.
He is not in a good place currently. But speaking of not being in a good place, poor Edge is caught in, as you are quite well at terming it, what feels like a never-ending feud with Finn Balor in Judgment Day.
Yeah, it's just that there's just no way for these people to get away from this. It's not that it's bad. If anything, it's actually getting better. It's developing pretty well, but it's also all been going on since June, at least, as well. So it's definitely been a long storyline. It doesn't feel like it's anywhere near its conclusion. I mean, Edge and Rey are definitely joined together. Fighting a common enemy. AJ Styles has now gone off on his own. We'll talk about that in a bit. Got his own backup. It wasn't bad or anything, but man, that finish was a lot. All the run-ins, the handcuffs, Beth and Rhea getting into it with each other. So much. It was like a 10-minute finishing sequence
in a 12-minute match or something like that.
it was wild. But you know what? In the end, the Judgment Day. Wow, the Judgment Day got as much heat as I've seen anyone get in the modern era after Rhea, dropped the chair, not the concerto, after Edge had already said, "I quit." I mean, it felt like an old school, we hate we hate these bad guys' reaction as much as anything I've seen in a long time. They really did something there. They definitely hit on something there.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about Judgment Day has just been in this weird spot where they had started to finally gain a little bit of traction recently, but then they still had to take some losses, and it really wasn't helping their cause. Because, was it Damian Priest that just lost to Edge on Raw recently?
Yeah, and then Priest lost to Riddle as well.
Yeah.
Priest being the bigger of the two main male wrestlers in this thing, taking all the jobs while Finn is more protected, is an interesting concept. Although Finn was always, I guess, a Triple H boy, you would say, dating back to NXT. So, because at the beginning of this era of the Judgment Day post Edge, it was three of them saying there was no leader.
Oh.
But as it's gone on, Finn has been established as a leader, and they say out loud that he's the leader. That's a Triple H change in the presentation.
Yeah, and it's not completely bad, but it is kind of weird when your enforcer takes that many L's.
Yeah.
Essentially.
The Riddle loss was really unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And him taking the pins and the tags is definitely weird. Now, the thing with Dominic is you don't want him taking that beating. I mean, he did a little bit on Monday after all this. But you want to save it for that moment where Ray finally realizes he has to deal with his son physically. And it doesn't feel like it's going to... You don't need to be a big moment because... Not saying Dominic is good, but there is enough emotion wrapped into the storyline, and Ray's doing a good enough job that people do boo the heck out of Dominic. Some of it may be that old freeze go away heat.
Oh,
but when Ray does finally take it to him, the roof's gonna go off.
Yeah, people actively, especially after Raw, I think people really actively want to see that happen now. Just because he is such a hanger-on that it's funny and appropriate and still isn't really going to help Dominic in the long run.
Yeah. He still doesn't have. I mean, this is it. I mean, once we get that match in the ring, and once Ray hits the 619, and once Ray pins him, they probably should just make it a loser leaves WWE match and send Dominic on back down to NXT. Or back down to NXT for the first time, because he's never been there.
I don't know if that's going to completely save him at this point. If he hasn't learned enough on the main roster, I mean, I know that it's a lot of it's been during the pandemic era here. I would think he's gotten in enough training and in input to make a bigger leap in his career than he has at this juncture. I'm not sure NXT completely solves that problem. Who knows? Maybe it would. But, I have no idea what he's going to do after this is over. Like, it's... Being Rhea Ripley's whipping boy is only going to get you so far. As much as many of the people on the internet are going to fetishize this thing, if you get beat up by your father... That funness is going to go away quickly. So, you brought him up a little bit. why don't we discuss them a little bit more? AJ Styles has been pulled into the storyline.
It now feels like there's two separate storylines going on involving the Judgment Day.
Yeah. What felt like I want to say it was definitely last week, maybe the week before, where the way AJ Styles was talking, I'm like, are they bringing Gallows and Anderson back? Like it was definitely a thought that had crossed my mind. Just like I say, the way that he was wording things, it didn't feel like he was just going to get help from someone within the WWE itself.
Yeah, no, it's been feeling that way. That the speculation that they're going to be on their way back, and then it was basically confirmed Monday that they were definitely on their way back. I mean, not necessarily people expecting them to turn around right away and show up on Raw that night, but they did. Well, got a pretty good reaction. It makes sense. They will never be my favorite tag team, but they have a clear role and that they fit in. So I'm not going to complain too much. Although hilariously, Carl Anderson shows up on Raw while he's still New Japan's never open weight champion.
That was something that I found out on the internet today.
I am so far removed from New Japan. And finding out that they're going to run Okada versus Jay White at the Tokyo Dome again, not exactly inspiring me to check to check out any New Japan again anytime soon. But I digress.
That is a fair and valid opinion to have.
So yes, again, but there was also an announcement that AEW was going to be entering some kind of a partnership with the NOAH organization over in Japan. So that makes you wonder: is the New Japan partnership open for WWE to involve themselves in? Or is he just never going to drop that title back?
I would think that legally that would have needed to be talked about. But who knows? Like, I guess I don't know how his contract is with New Japan.
If he wasn't under contract with New Japan, I mean, a belt is just a prop, and they can't make him. I guess they would have the right to get it back, but he brought it back with him to the United States, and I don't know what legal recourse New Japan would have with that at that point.
I wonder what shipping on a championship belt doesn't he live near Atlanta? Or no, does he live near Cincinnati still?
I have no idea. I have not been keeping up on where Carl Anderson lives or who he's living with now.
Well, I thought that him and Gallows had a gym or a wrestling academy.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll turn out some great workers.
I'm about your level of excitement with them coming back.
They're not a good tag team. Like, they're living on this reputation that because they were in New Japan during that boom, the early boom period, it makes them good. It does not. Their tag title matches were the worst part of New Japan shows during that era.
They had a chance to wrestle a bunch of good tag teams their last run in the WWE, and I don't remember any of them. They wrestled New Day and the Usos and like all the other tag teams that had good matches with each other, and for some reason they had duds against Gallows and Anderson all the time.
Yeah, no, they're not good, but they make the boys in the back laugh, so they keep getting jobs.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, you need people to take some L's that have some credibility too. So that
AJ has, you know, there was a rule that needed to be filled that they filled perfectly. Where do they go from there? We'll see.
Yeah, and then that is the other interesting thing with this whole dynamic. It seemed like AJ, it made sense. It was just like, oh, it's going to be AJ Styles, Rey, and Edge taking on, oh, hold on, there's only two males in Judgment Day.
Well, there's three. Wait, oh.
well, okay, two and a half. But yeah, so it seemed like we had a 3-on-3 match. And Gallows and Anderson give you a 3-on-3 match, but in a whole different light. Like, it's a weird spot for Judgment Day to be in now that Gallows and Anderson are in there, even if the numbers, you know, still work out for the WWE bringing in a trios belt.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Just to be a troll. But yeah, it makes sense for Styles to bring them in. Storyline wise, though, it really muddies the waters quite a bit.
Yeah, it does.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that one goes. Trying to think.
Final topic of the evening, the saga of one Mr. Bobby Lashley and his no good, terrible, bad day on Monday.
Yeah. I kind of took a quick peek here, and it seems like a good place to end. Because Seth Rollins, they're doing a great job during Raw of selling his myriad of injuries from the fight pit. Everyone, it definitely seems like they're leaning towards a Bobby Lashley, he gets to walk over his beat-up opponent kind of situation going on here. And then, all of a sudden, the feud that people wanted to have happen, I'm not sure how many times over the years at this juncture.
They had a taste of it earlier this year, but then it was dropped quickly. It was dropped immediately. But in all that, Lashley did get the win. The only one meeting between Lashley and himself and Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. And has recently in promos been bringing that up, putting Lesnar on the list of people he's defeated. And not surprisingly, Brock Lesnar took offense to that.
Has that been actually said on WWE film somewhere, or is that the presumed logic moving forward here?
I think that's the presumed logic moving forward. Yeah, that, Lashley's been bragging about the win, and, Brock was distracted with his Roman by the Roman Reigns matches, but he had not forgotten about one Mr. Lashley, and that win he has over him. So Brock shows up, absolutely destroys Lashley. Oh, poor Bobby. I mean, the crowd, I mentioned it earlier, Bobby felt like he was on the verge of something over the summer, but then just kind of got stale and just not the most, all, but not the most exciting presentation of, you know, him as, you know, kind of smiling babyface Bobby. The crowd really enjoyed seeing him get his ass kicked by Brock Lesnar, chanting one more time as Brock hit F5 after F5 after F5.
That was one of those moments where I'm just sitting there going, yeah, I can see why the Colosseum in Rome was a thing.
Oh yes, people were going were absolutely nuts for this. And then, you know, Brock leaves, Seth comes out, demands his match, you know, using the logic, hey, I'm hurt too. They do a short match. Seth feels like he's also on the verge of a babyface turn here. Crowd's singing along with his theme long after it stopped playing.
He actually stopped in the middle of the match and conducted the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, we are not... It's going to be weird when Cody Rhodes returns, but I don't believe you can keep Seth a heel that long.
Yeah, just because it's such a long-term injury, like, that's going to be one of those ones that when Cody comes back, you're going to have to address it at some juncture, but, you know, whatever. You can always make some shit up, you know?
Yeah, because there is no keeping Seth heel at this point. I mean, this, you know, he has been consistently one of the best, you know, the most shining part of Raw for a very long time. If the United States Championship is going to be the de facto men's title on Raw, it makes all the sense in the world for it to be on him. Seth feels like he's on the verge of a major babyface turn for the first time in many years. And hopefully this stuff with Brock can give Lashley his ex back.
Yeah.
Now I'm not hopeful of Lashley winning a match between him and Brock in Saudi Arabia next month. But hopefully Brock goes into the match wanting to work, and it's not the Brock Lesnar 3 to 5 minute special, because Lashley does deserve better than that.
Well, as long as we don't have, and it's going to be my go-to until it's not my go-to, I suppose, until something worse comes up in his more recent history. John Moxley versus Brock Lesnar.
No, or Kofi versus Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
That's probably a better example.
Well.
Between the two, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I think about Moxley more, but just because it was a little bit longer of a match. The Kofi thing
It was a longer match that Brock was sleepwalking.
Yeah.
And they did a great build for it. You know, Moxley, Ambrose was chomping at the bit for this match to have, you know, as wild of a match as you could possibly have under the TVPG, the auspices of TVPG. But Brock wasn't happy. We know this. We've talked about this on the show back when it was back at the time or after the infamous Dean Ambrose interview on the Stone Cold's podcast. We definitely litigated this pretty well
for years at this point.
For quite a while, yes. I don't believe that Brock will show that kind of contempt for Lashley. Now, granted, I don't know if Brock's showing up. We're looking to go 20 minutes.
Oh. No, and I'm still... You mentioned the 3 to 5 minute things. I'm still okay with 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, we can get on the northern side of 5 to 10, and it'd be fine. fine. You know, two big bowls. As long as Lashley gets his offense. So again, I don't think Lashley's winning it, and so that'll be another situation where it's like, we got to figure out what we're doing with Bobby.
Oh.
Maybe you just at this point just reunite him with MVP and the Hurt Business, and just try to pretend that the last 2 years didn't happen, or last year and a half or so didn't happen.
Well, like you said, there was a decent chunk of this U.S. Championship run was for the better, but yeah, it seems like he kind of lost some real steam the last couple of months.
Yeah,
and that some type of reboot or tweak to his character is for the best. So, hopefully better days for Bobby Lashley ahead, even if he does lose to Brock Lesnar whenever that match does officially go down.
I really don't think it's a myth there, so once again, hopefully the match is competitive and Bobby gets his moments over on Brock in the build-up on Raw.
Yeah.
That'll help a lot. Because he got absolutely destroyed on Monday while the crowd was frothing at their mouths for it. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Yes, the crowd was. It looks like we got it all covered here then.
Well,
I mean,
I definitely think we did. Wow.
There are some other...
It's 11:30 your time.
There's some other small things, but hey, I don't give a shit about those right now. Bell Time beer for the show. The choice from @DeFrango11 is Dankhouse Brewing Fruit Rolled Up Rhubarb Pie Sour Ale with strawberry, rhubarb, and banana. This beer is delicious. I went to the brewery this past weekend and picked up what they like to call freshies. And, I have some more Dankhouse now in my fridge, so I figured I'd clean out the last old one from my trip back in May. 30 minutes is a decent investment to make, especially when it's an hour round trip. Had some good food out there, had some good other beverages that I can talk about at some other time. Bell Time beer suggestion, fruit rolled up rhubarb pie. Find it in Newark, Ohio. Not a huge place, but definitely some very high quality craft beer at Dankhouse Brewing. So that is the suggestion from @DeFrango11. He is @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.